We live in a time that's so very dark, it seems. A couple months ago, I guess it was now, I extended the invitation, and in that I mentioned that it seems like life is becoming less and less valuable. There's been a lot of things that have happened over the past year alone in our country that has shown that people don't respect life anymore. We know that in the 70s, when it was passed, the law was passed and made constitutional that a woman could, and I'm just going to call it what it is, that she could murder her unborn child. That was going to have a ripple effect that would carry on for years to come. And it used to be that people would argue that abortion was okay because it's nothing more than tissue. It's just something growing in you, but it's not actually alive. We knew how absurd the argument was. I believe that most of those who made the argument realized how absurd the argument was. And so now you have things, like I mentioned about a month or so ago, that you have women who are actually writing poems to this unborn child that they are about to murder, calling it by name and saying it just wasn't right. The timing was off. You would have had my eyes in your father's chin. You probably would have done all these things in your life, but it just wasn't right. The timing was off. And it's almost like a letter of apology. Well, if that's nothing more than tissue, if it's nothing more than just something that's in you, why are you apologizing to it? It seems we've even gone a step further where not too long ago a woman wrote, and she was writing to these women who are contemplating having an abortion because maybe their child has what her child has when she was pregnant with her child, had Down syndrome. Her son is now in his mid-40s. And as she's writing this letter to these other women, she says, "I wish I had aborted my child. I love him dearly, but it has been taxing on my life, and it has been difficult. My advice would be to you to abort your child." There are actually those who are even advocating, and on our college campuses, is actually something that's growing a huge following, is post-birth abortions. Suicide. Celebrities have committed suicide, others glorified. I've even heard those who we would call brethren excuse it and say it's okay. Some states have passed laws, and it's not going to stop there, where assisted suicide would be fine. It's surprising language, but they said that since some of these laws have been passed, many people have taken advantage of the law. That's strange language to me. Life is becoming less and less valuable. It's sad. It really is that there are people who go through hard and difficult times in their lives where they don't know where to find the answers. They don't know what to do, and they even feel like life just isn't worth living anymore. That actually living is an inconvenience when that's not what God intended. I think Psalm 77 is a really good psalm that addresses some of these types of things, and we're going to study that this morning because it is true that we're going to have some days where we just have trouble, it seems, that we're going to have difficulties. Life has a way, it seems, of overwhelming us, and many times life can be just downright brutal. It can be brutal either for a season where you go through a rough patch in life, or maybe your entire lifespan, it seems, is surrounded by nothing but trouble and difficulty. We live in the most prosperous nation, in the most prosperous time the world has ever known. And yet with all of our advances and with all of our great achievements, we live in the most depressed society that the world has ever known. At least it seems that way anyway, especially by statistics. Statistically speaking, 20% of all Americans, one out of every five Americans, has been diagnosed with clinical depression. One in five. 20% of our nation. 20%. That means in a room this size, virtually every pew in here has at least one person, if not two, who is going through something so dark and so desperate in their life that they could be clinically diagnosed as being depressed. not just raining outside, I guess. How does that make you feel? With everything that we have got and everything that we have done and everything that we have achieved, and yet we live in a nation that's known for being one out of every five depressed about something. And that's just those who have actually went to a doctor about it. Why is that? And what are we to do? I don't subscribe to the idea that there's no such thing as a need for medication. But I do subscribe to the notion that it's used way too much. What I would recommend for those especially like me is that we be merciful. And that we be understanding. And that we identify with the fact that, yes, life is hard and it is difficult. And there are sometimes people who find themselves in a situation where they can't even seem to get out of the bed. And it's real. That they spend most of their time, it seems, just lying on their back staring at the ceiling because they're convinced that if they start their day, it's only going to go downhill from there. And it's real. And I think we all go through it from time to time, if not for a long period of time. So what are we to do? Let's think about it for just a moment. You know, depression is not something that's just a respecter of person. It's a constant battle. And it is something for a lot of people that even the idea of just getting up and starting your day and doing the laundry may be something that's the highlight and the grandest achievement of the entire week. That there are some people, it seems, that are always just trying to grab hold of and just grasp their sanity because it feels like it's slipping away. There are those that the phone rings for them because it's their friends and their family, those who love them, but they won't answer. Because they don't want to and cannot feel compelled to be consoled during that time. Let's think about just a few characters. Let's go to Numbers 11 and think about some. I think there's some in the Scriptures we can talk about just for a moment that have went through things such as this. Numbers 11. Once again, the children of Israel are complaining. They take their complaints to Moses, as they often did. Moses is wanting answers. He's wanting to help. Moses, being a very humble man and wanting to do those things that would be good for his people, he says in Numbers 11, starting at verse 10, that Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, everyone at the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was greatly aroused. Moses also was displeased. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you afflicted your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you have laid the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I beget them that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers'? Where am I to get meat to give to all these people? For they weep all over me, saying, 'Give us meat that we may eat.' I am not able to bear all these people alone because the burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, please kill me here and now. If I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness." I think Moses was going through a time where he was pretty depressed because a huge burden had been laid upon him that he felt like he just could not bear himself. He could not carry this burden. And so he even prays to God, "If this is the way it is for me, just kill me now. If you really love me, God, then kill me. Let it come to an end." There's others that we can talk about as well. You remember David in Psalm 32? David, because of the sin in his life, was severely depressed. And not just because of the sin, but the fact that he was keeping silent about it. Psalm 32 and verse 3, "When I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer." David knew what it was like. David had committed sin with Bathsheba, and that sin that he thought was going to bring him fulfillment actually was something that completely destroyed his family. And it obviously had a huge and profound effect upon his life, to where David felt like he was just walking through a deserted land and had no water to drink whatsoever. His bones even hurt. Those I know of who have gone through depression and feel depressed constantly, that's one of the things they do talk about a lot. It's like it's in my bones where I cannot find the strength or the energy to move. My bones even hurt. Here with David was because of his own sin. In 1 Kings 19, and if you turn there in 1 Kings, you remember the previous chapter of 1 Kings, chapter 18, that Elijah faces off with the prophets of Baal. And he even mocks them about the fact that their God is a God. He'll answer them. and yet nothing happens, even though they go about cutting their flesh so much that the blood gushes out on them. A huge victory is won for our God, and they take all these prophets of Baal down by the river, and they destroy all of them. But Jezebel says, by this time tomorrow, you're a dead man. And you remember what Elijah does? He goes off fleeing. He finds a place to hide, as it were, in 1 Kings 19 and verse 4. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and he came and sat down under a broom tree. And he prayed that he might die and said, "It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's." Elijah prayed for death. That life just isn't worth living anymore. You think about somebody like Job. Loses everything, and his own wife turns on him. You're still holding on to your integrity. You want to live. This is the life that you want. Curse God and die. His friends show up. And they spend several days sitting there with him silently to try to help him and to console him and to comfort him. And then they open their mouth and things go bad. Job said, and Job it mentions, "It would have been better if I were stillborn and never saw these days. Cursed the day that he was born, if this is what life is like." It's not a respecter of persons, is it? It happens to the wealthy, it happens to the poor, it happens to the smart, it afflicts those who are not so smart, those who are striving to do right, those who don't care about doing right. It affects everyone. And the thing about it is, you see a list like this and you notice that every one of these men are men of faith. These are men that we look up to. These are men that we have as examples. These are people that we're told to imitate. We have somebody like Moses, the most humble man that ever existed, save our Lord. Right? You have David. A man after God's own heart. You have Elijah. Elijah, the name that becomes synonymous with the idea of being a prophet. It represents all the prophets. Job, the man who we're told to imitate because he had such great patience. And yet all of these knew what it was like. And so what I mean by this is that it's not always that, like with David, because of sin. But sometimes it is because life is hard. And we get distressed. And we get downtrodden. And life just has a way of beating us down. So what are we to do? Is life not worth living anymore? Are we to forget about it all? Are we to throw it all away and say that it's not useful anymore? There will be times when we become overcome with grief. And there will be times where we have nothing but hardships. And there will be times where we feel like giving up. And maybe even feel like life just isn't worth living anymore. And that's where I think Psalm 77 comes in. So let's go to Psalm 77. Let's read that psalm in its entirety as we begin to look through it. Psalm 77, "I cried out to God with my voice, to God with my voice, and He gave ear to me. In the day of my trouble I sought the Lord. My hand was stretched out in the night without ceasing. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. You hold my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night, and I meditate within my heart, and my spirit makes diligent search. Will the Lord cast off forever? Will He be favorable no more? Has His mercy ceased forever? Has His promise failed forevermore? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has He in anger shut up His tender mercies?" And I said, "This is my anguish. But I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will also meditate on all your work and talk of your deeds. Your way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great a God as our God? You are the God who does wonders. You have declared your strength among the peoples. You have with your arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you. They were afraid. The depths also trembled. The clouds poured out water. The skies sent out a sound. Your arrows also flashed about. The voice of your thunder was in the whirlwind. The lightnings lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way was in the sea. Your path in the great waters, and your footsteps were not known. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron." You know, one of the things that we see in this particular psalm is that at the very beginning of it, you see a person, this psalm of Asaph, who is very, very troubled. And he mentions about the day of his trouble. And one of the things that he says at the very beginning is that he would cry out to his God. That what do? In the midst of our struggle, in the midst of our trouble, in our darkest times, when things get so desperate, what are we to do? We are to cry out to our God. And he mentions it twice to emphasize it. I cried out to my God. Are there days when you feel like no one else knows, when no one else understands, when there's no one else to listen? In verse 4, he says, I was so troubled that he could not speak. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. As the ESV puts it, I can only moan. I can only cry. I can only groan. There are times where maybe we can go to our God and the only thing that we can cry out is, God, I do not know what's happening to me. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I feel this way. I don't know what's happening in my life. I don't know what to do. I must cry out to my God and let Him know what's happening in my life. The psalmist here says that that's the thing that will help him in carrying that load and that burden that he has. And whenever we feel weary, whenever we feel faint, whenever we feel brokenhearted, whenever we feel like crying out, who do I cry out to? Who is the one that I call to my side and lay my burden before? In verses 4 through 6, he talks about the fact that he would reflect on past blessings. You hold my eyelids open. When he says that, he says, I can't even sleep. And what I think is going on there is the idea that he's trying to find answers. I can't even sleep at night because I'm trying to figure out what is going on. And throughout the night, he's meditating upon these things and trying to consider what it is that's happening in his life. Where do I go? Where does my heart go when things go wrong? Here, the psalmist says that he talks about and remembers the days of old, the days in verse 6, when they were singing. Where does my heart go? Do I continually dwell on all the bad things that are going on, all the circumstances, all the difficulties, and all the problems? Or does my heart really have a place to go? You know where my heart goes? My heart goes to places like last Sunday when we gathered to pray for our brother. That's where my heart goes. My heart goes to those times I've been sitting with my brothers in a men's Bible study. And we talk about things like grit. And we talk about things like being a strong soldier and having some honor. That's where my heart goes. My heart goes to those times when I've gathered with hundreds of my brethren and I've sung praises to my God. That's where my heart goes. And I am sorry. If you don't participate in those types of things, I don't know where your heart goes. I don't know. I don't know how some Christians even make it. Because I know your life gets hard. All of our lives get hard. I don't know where your heart goes. If you don't have those moments, you don't have those times, where does your heart go? Brethren, assembling has a lot more to do with the ideas that we need to stay strong and stay wise in our service to God than just gathering together to fulfill some type of requirement to take the Lord's Supper. Where does your heart go? Because if you don't have times like that, I'll tell you where I think it goes, because I know it's happened to me in the past. It goes to the dark things. It goes to those things that are going wrong, those things that I start making up. And things become a lot harder and a lot more difficult. Because I have nothing else to do but think about how bad things could get. And what does that lead to? Why should I even try? Every molehill becomes a mountain. Every person becomes a giant. Every battle is one where I cannot win, and victory never enters into my mind and into the equation. I always think going into it, I'm going to fail. Where does my heart go? Brother, where does your heart go in your dark and difficult times, in your day of trouble? Where does it go? Because if you have marriage trouble, you're going to convince yourself that things are only going to get worse. When your kids are struggling, maybe they're not doing too well in school. Little Johnny had something bad on his report card about not being able to behave himself. And so now we think that he'll never be successful at anything because he can't seem to take a nap in kindergarten. Financial struggles, and you'll think bankruptcy is the only way out of it. And God forbid there's ever a problem in the church. Because the first thing that comes to our mind is it's going to be a split, it's going to be ugly, and there's going to be unfaithfulness. And so what do? We don't try to work on the problem, work a solution. We only dwell on how bad it is and how bad things can get. Where does your heart go? Share some moments with other faithful brethren, strong brethren, so that you'll have a place to go and something to help you in your darkest times and in your difficulties. What we as brethren need to be able to do is to stop dwelling on all the negatives and start thinking about some of the good things that we have. In verses 11 and 12, once again, I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will also meditate on all your works and talk of your deeds. One of the things that we have to do is remember how strong and great our God truly is. That we need to remember what He has done for others, and especially what He's done for me. And I don't need to just internalize these things, but start talking about these things with others about these things. In other words, brethren, stop taking inventory of all the things you can't do, all the things that have not gone well, all the places you can't go. Stop taking inventory of all those things and start remembering what God has given you and what God has allowed you to do. Because we serve a great and wonderful God. We serve a God of blessings. We serve a God of deliverance. We serve a God of love. And if the only thing we ever dwell on is those negative things, why would you not be depressed? Let me tell you, I think it was Mark Twain who said, never tell people your troubles because half don't care and the other half think you deserve it. Right? And you got to be honest, sometimes in talking to one another, we can be the most depressing people on the face of the earth when we have so much to live for. Life has such value to us. We know the soul is valuable because Satan himself is trying to destroy it. And yet Christ came to give us life and to give it to us more abundantly. That even in the midst of whatever life throws at us, we still value the life that was given. And we live it to its fullest extent and reflect on those things which God has done. I think we also need to be confident enough and have a close enough relationship with our God to really ask God some hard questions. This is what the psalmist does in verses 7 through 9. He asks God, Will you cast off forever? Will He be favorable no more? You ever asked yourself these questions? Internally? Maybe even talk to your friends? Has His mercy ceased forever? He knows how He throws that on the end of all these. Forever? Has His promise failed forevermore? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has He in anger shut up His tender mercies? I think sometimes we do need to ask our God questions. Is life ever going to get better? Why is this happening to me? Where is this peace that surpasses all understanding? Where is the God of peace at this moment? Because I think a lot of times we have them in our head, we have them in our heart, but I think we truly are afraid. We're afraid to say them. We may even say them to a friend, but I think we're definitely afraid to ask God, help me understand. And what we have to understand, brethren, is that it's okay to ask God hard questions, so long as we know that God is the answer to those questions. It's when we doubt God, it's when we don't want to put our trust in God. If that's why you're asking those questions, you don't have the right kind of relationship with your God to be asking those questions. I'm not afraid to ask my wife about certain things, even though I know she may not like what it is that I'm asking. But I'm not afraid to do that because she knows that what we're interested in is the answer and how to get to the solution. I also know that there's some things I'd better not ask her because I know what the answer is going to be already. Do you have that kind of relationship with God? Do you trust Him that much? Do you believe in Him that much? That you really want God to answer God, are you going to always? God, will you never again? Have you forgotten me? It's not an indictment of God. It's a cry of a person who does not know what is going on. What is the problem? What am I supposed to do? Help me, my God, is the plea. You see that because the next thing that he starts talking about is redirecting his thoughts. It's interesting that in verse 9, at the end of verse 9, is a conclusion of several real hard questions that he's asking of God. But then in verse 10 it says, "And I said," or as some of the versions say, "And then I thought," which I think is a lot more accurate. I asked God these hard questions, but then I thought. And what he says in these next few verses is, I had to change the way that I was thinking. This is my anguish. In other words, I am going through a desperate time. But I will remember the days of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will. And if you highlight in your Bible or underline in your Bible, you might want to put some marks under those words, "I will." Because you see how determined he was. That sometimes we may need help in changing the way that we think. But it always starts with the determination of the person who needs their thinking changed. I will. Just like the prodigal son, I will go back. He was determined. This is what I'm going to start doing. Yes, I have this desperate thing going on. I have this dark moment. I have this dark time. I have this depression. I have this downtrodden spirit within me. I have this anguish and this infirmity. But I'm not going to dwell on that. I will rather dwell on something else. And I will remember my God. We have to change the way that we think about things and our perspective of life. We can't give in to those negative thoughts. He had to instead change his focus. Then he begins to magnify his God. What happens many times is that, and what you see at the very beginning of this psalm, is you have the molehills that have become mountains. You have a man who is talking about how great his problems are and how small his God is. And by the end of the psalm, we start seeing that he's referring to his problems as being so small and his God as being so great. And so instead of magnifying his problems, he begins to magnify his God. "Your way, O God, is in the holiness," or in the sanctuary. And I love this part of verse 13. And really what this verse is talking about is how high and mighty God is when it says, "Who is so great a God as our God? You are the God who does wonders. You have declared your strength among the peoples. You have, with your arm, redeemed your people." God has time and time again pointed to us and demonstrated to us what the solution is. That we shouldn't always see the problems, but we should also be able to see the victory that God gives us. And there's three things that he mentions there that we should be focusing on. First, he talks about that God is holy. He mentions that God is holy and there is no other like our God. Secondly, he mentions God's power and his majesty and how that power and majesty has been proven through his miracles and the things which he has done throughout all times. And thirdly, he mentions that God has redeemed his people and shown his love and his care for them throughout all times. So has God forgotten? Can God not redeem? Has God withheld? No. But God answers in his time. And I magnify my God because he is the one who will give deliverance. He is the one who gives salvation. And he is the one that I'm looking to. You know, there's a song that we sing in the kids' class where we talk about, "My God is so big, so strong, and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do." And we sing that song because we're trying to teach our children a very important lesson. We're trying to teach them that as you grow older, you need to learn how to trust your God. Need how to have a relationship with your God. Need to find favor with your God. So that as you get older and life begins to test you in ways that you never would have believed that it would. That you won't give up. That you won't fail. That you won't fall down. That you won't doubt. That you won't stray. That you'll have victory in our Lord. Because your God is so big. He's so strong and he's so mighty. And there's nothing your God cannot do. Nothing. Who is a God like our God? So why is my soul cast down? Why am I disquieted? Why am I depressed? Why do I feel like life just isn't worth living anymore? Because I've forgotten something that we try to teach even our children about who our God is. And lastly, he points out that we need to trust and have faith in God's deliverance. In those last two verses of Psalm 77, he calls to mind, your ways were in the sea, your path in the great waters. You led your people like a flock. He recalls to their minds the days when the seas were divided and they walked across on dry ground. They walked from a place where there was nothing but certainty of death to a place where there was nothing but certainty of victory. And what I find so very interesting about those verses, which I think is very telling, he says, you led the way, and yet we didn't see your footsteps. You led the way, but your footsteps weren't seen. When I look at my past, brethren, I know there's been a lot of times when I've had dark and difficulties, when I've had a lot of trouble, and I know God led me through it. But I didn't see his footsteps. But I know it was my God who led me. He brought me to victory. That's the thing that our kids are going through in our classes. Victory. There is no greater victory than the victory that our God gives. God delivers when deliverance doesn't even seem possible. Oh, that we had a childlike faith once again. That our God is so big, so great, so mighty, so strong. And truly believe that there was nothing our God could not do. Days get hard. Difficulties do come. The question I want to ask you is that will you be delivered from your day of trouble? I think a lot of times as Christians, especially those of us who have been Christians for a long period of time, I don't think we like to admit that we have problems. I don't think we like to admit that sometimes maybe we feel like life isn't worth living anymore. Because we're Christians. And after all, as Christians, we don't have problems anymore, right? And we know that's not true. Christ came to solve the problems. And the biggest problem of all is sin. And that this morning, if you're not a Christian, we would like to share with you the gospel of Jesus Christ. We would like to convince you that the God that we serve is so great. He's so big. He's so strong. He's so mighty. And there's nothing he can't do. We want to share him with you this morning. If you found that you are in the midst of a dark and difficult time and you need help with that, cry out to your God. Let us help you. Let us bring you along if that's what's needed. But don't go home today when there's something wrong and expect for it to just get better on its own. It doesn't happen that way. If you're subject to the invitation this morning, if there's something that we can do to help you, please let us know. We would love to help any this morning. As together we stand and sing, won't you please come?